The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Prices for Oasis, $86.50 if you would like to get a ticket, was what we were told. People then went in and discovered dynamic pricing, and the $86.50 ticket became $450, $418, around those kind of prices, with the choice being take it or don't. We were speaking earlier on in the programme to the man who was formerly in charge of Ticketmaster's European operations, and he was saying, this is a thing called supply and demand. It is the way the airlines price things. It is dynamic pricing. It is the norm. And if you don't like it, go see The Lion King and don't go to Oasis. We will find out whether or not you should want to go to Oasis in a second from Dave Fanning. Before that, Conor Pope from the Irish Times is with us. Conor, this is capitalism. Tough luck. Suck it up.
Okay, well, can I put a counter argument to you, Anton?
Please.
If a ticket tout was to buy a ticket for Oasis for $86.50, and then the ticket tout was to sell it for €415, that would be considered an outrage. Okay? And in fact, as a result of recent legislation, it would be considered a crime. But when a ticket selling platform, in conjunction with the concert promoter and the band, do exactly the same thing, it's dynamic pricing, and it's viewed as entirely legitimate and all to do with supply and demand. It's kind of ridiculous.
Well, let me put to you what Tommy Higgins said to us. This again, the man who was formerly Exec VP for European Operations and Ticketmaster. What he said was that the critical difference between a ticket tout and the current system is that those who create the art are the ones benefiting from this pricing as opposed to a tout. So the artist gets the money, the promoter gets the money, and the system benefits, and we get more art thanks to that.
And you know what, Tommy is 100% right on that, in that respect, because I think the problem with the touting system, and I'm by no means drawing a comparison between touts and Ticketmaster, but what I'm saying is that for the consumer, for the ticket-buying public, the net effect is identical. Now, when it's done through the official channels, yes, the artist benefits, the promoter benefits, they're the ones who are taking the risk. The tickets, the scalper is taking zero risk at all, so they shouldn't be benefiting. And I think we should do what we can to wipe out the whole curse of ticket touting and ticket scalping. But the reality is the people who are being asked to pay the price here are the consumers. And there was another issue that I think an awful lot of people had a great difficulty with, and that was the fact that MCD, the concert promoters, who by the way are part owned by Live Nation, who also own Ticketmaster, but that might be a story for another day. So MCD announced with breathless excitement on Tuesday evening that the tickets were going to be from €86.50. Now, when I contacted MCD during the week and said, OK, well, from €86.50 doesn't give us much information here. What's the range? How much are they going to be? What are the top prices? I got nothing back from them. So I think an awful lot of consumers, people who were really anxious to see Oasis, felt kind of misled because they didn't anticipate this so-called in-demand pricing. And I think what we're going to have in August of next year is this absolutely absurd situation where you, Anton, because you were lucky and you got your pre-sale tickets, are standing beside me, who was unlucky, on the same field in Croke Park, shoulder to shoulder. You'll have paid €86.50. I'll have paid €415 for exactly the same ticket and exactly the same experience. And the terrible thing here is, like, Oasis are not acting in isolation here. Oasis are not acting alone. MCD are not acting alone. This is now commonplace across the ticketing industry, in certainly in the United States. The whole dynamic pricing model was rolled out by Ticketmaster in 2018. Almost every single big name artist that will sell out stadiums is now involved in it. Even the untouchable Bruce Springsteen has been associated with dynamic ticket pricing, and he didn't like it, you know, but you know, his people were benefiting from it. The promoters were benefiting from it. And once the toothpaste is out of the tube, it's really hard to get it back. And I, for one, don't buy the comparison between airline seats. Okay. Because the reality is that you could argue that it's supply and demand, but what's wrong with the old system that was in place whereby you went out, you bought a ticket for a particular area of a stadium at a set price, and when all those tickets were sold, there might be more premium seats or there might be a different level of package that would sell for a higher price. This idea that surge pricing are price dynamics or in-demand pricing means that you and I sitting next to each other in the same stand have paid wildly different prices. Makes no sense to me. Now, and ultimately, the people who lose here, and this is the important thing, the people who lose here are those very people that Oasis once warned not to put their faith in a rock and roll band who'll throw it all away. Ultimately, the fans, the really hardcore fans, are going to lose because I don't give a rashers. And I'm sure you probably don't care that much either. I was queuing up to buy tickets more out of a sense of research and seeing what was going on. Like I was offered the €415 standing tickets. There was literally no way in the world I was going to pay the guts of a grand for two tickets to see Oasis. But there are people I know who desperately want to see them, who believe this will be a major part of their adult life. And they will pay them. So the only people ending up paying the price here are the hardcore fans. And I'm not going to slag those people off at all. Lord knows I paid enough to see Taylor Swift earlier this summer. So I was one of those people who was the victim of this so-called surge.
Now, hang on for a minute, Conor. There is another issue that I want to ask about, as well as the dynamic pricing. The other thing that I saw an awful lot of frustration about, and I saw you on social media yesterday asking people for their own personal experience. What of the thing, in terms of the consumer... protection is the wrong phrase, but customer service, of allowing people to queue, telling them that they are progressing up the queue, and at the point of purchase, hurling them out so that they get rejected. That seems to have happened across hundreds of, if not thousands of people.
It does. And I think one of the things that is problematic here is there is this total absence of transparency as to how the system works. Now, I'm not slagging off Ticketmaster here because, you know, a lot of people are available to do that. So, you know, they have a very efficient mechanism by which they sell tickets. But they keep all of their algorithms and all of their systems as closely guarded a secret as the Vatican once protected the third secret of Fatima. I mean, they reveal nothing about it. So we didn't know why some people might have got booted out of the system because, you know, but you know, maybe it was because the Ticketmaster system saw they were bots. Maybe they'd hit refresh too many times. Maybe the systems just, you know, were creaking and couldn't handle the demand. There's all sorts of things that we don't know. But can you imagine that, like, when the frustration of being, let's say, 10,000 in the queue and suddenly you're first or 50th in the queue and suddenly the system crashes and you're gone and you're back to square one. Now, in my case, it didn't really make a blind bit of difference because when I logged on, and by the way, I logged on well before 8 a.m. So I was in the waiting room like a gombean, like the waiting for to be allowed into the queue. I got into the queue at exactly 8 a.m. I was 138,000th in the queue. My wife joined the queue about a second later and she was 500,000 people behind me. Like, I don't understand how it works. And nobody understands how it works other than the techies in Ticketmaster. And in that absence of information, there's going to be this swirl of conspiracy and confusion and upset.
Well, we may find out depending on what the EU gets on with their investigation, because there have been calls for both in Ireland and across the EU for there to be an investigation into how all of this works. And undoubtedly, Conor will be writing about this in the Irish Times in the coming days. Conor, thank you as ever. Conor Pope from the Irish Times. The question that Conor raises in all of this is, he said it didn't particularly matter to him because he isn't a dyed-in-the-wool fan. But for some, this was the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see this seminal band. This is where Dave Fanning comes in. Dave, can you explain to me what happened to Oasis? Because my understanding was Oasis was, you know, meh, Oasis, them and Blur. It was kind of the 90s. We're all past that. Let's move on. And everybody seems to have gone completely off the deep end as if it is John Lennon coming back from beyond the dead.
Oh, for many it is.
Why?
That's a good question, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, like, it depends if you were the right age at the right time. I mean, I remember those gigs in 96 in August at Cork and the madness of it all and the leaving cert results just out. And it was just a moment in time that sometimes gets captured and that's just it. And you remember it forever. I mean, I also remember when people used to go and queue up for tickets or go to a local record shop or go to the venue and get tickets. And they came home with a physical ticket and that was it. They paid the money and all the nonsense that Conor's so correct about there didn't happen. So in other words, I'd love to go back to those days because people used to put all the tickets up on the wall in their bedsits and say, like, they looked at their lives through, look at the gigs I was at kind of thing. And all this is really important. And I go back then to 2 weeks ago where AC/DC played in Grove Park. And like, you know, people go, I've got a ticket box. You know, like, I've never seen AC/DC. I've got to go to AC/DC. And 82,000 people went and just, they had to go as part of something. And yet, you know, there's only one original member in the band, you know. Angus is the only guy there, you know. So, like, it's all part, like, I mean, four nights of Coldplay at the moment. I was there on Friday night. Like, you know, they could have done six nights. And Oasis could obviously do 10 nights.
Now, hang on for a minute. I want to ask you about Coldplay and how you got on. But to the Oasis thing, you know the Van Morrison principle where it depends on which Van Morrison shows up. Is it the same with Noel and Liam? Are these gigs going to be any good for the people who spent nearly 500 quid to stand in a pitch and watch them?
Well, 500 quid is outrageous. It's just completely wrong, especially when the tickets are advertised on a Tuesday at 86.50 or whatever it is, then suddenly you have to pay 400 quid. And all that business of queuing up and then you're out, then you refresh or don't refresh, you wait in line, you're back at the end of the line, you're accused of being a bot. It's just outrageous carry-on. It really is, you know. And then you turn up with no ticket at the end or one for 450.
Is it worth it, though, Dave? Are they going to be any good?
I mean, the thing is that, like, you know, Oasis don't do anything on stage much, right? Okay, so you have, you know, Liam, who's slightly slanted sideways, hand behind his back, parka jacket or whatever it is, you know, attitude and kind of all the rest of it. Then you have, you know, what you call him, Noel doing his thing and the others doing their thing as well. They don't use the stage. I mean, they don't use the stage like, say, Chris Martin does. They don't use the stage like Bono does. They don't use the stage even like Springsteen might in terms of just pushing it all out there. They just play the music. But, I mean, that's what Oasis fans want. And, like, I do get the whole thing. And, frankly, even if Oasis aren't my favourite band, they're great fun. I love the fact that there's a four-piece band out there now creating all this kind of thing, because the charts in America last week, there wasn't one band in the top 50. It's all either kind of Ray or Dua Lipa or SZA or Sabrina Carpenter or Olivia Rodrigo or Chloe. You see where I'm going with this? It's all Doja Cat, you know. In fact, there's one called Chapel Rowan, who was known to her parents and nobody else last January. And now she's not just a star since Coachella, she's a superstar, whether we like it or not.
But is this not a wonderful thing? Is this not what we... Do we not want the Daniel Bedingfields appearing out of their bedrooms and taking over?
No, definitely not. We want a band in the shed in the back garden taking over. For God's sake. I mean, it's all gone wrong. Where's the bass, drums, guitar, vocals kind of thing, you know? And, like, was that, what do you call it? Like, I'll tell you, like, some of these gigs, for instance, you're up front, like, I was at, what do you call it, Altogether Now a few weeks ago to see the National, because I really like the National. And you're up front of the National. I would have some complaints because I don't like the way they do the stage. I'd rather it wasn't so dark. I want to see more of the band than just your man, but it's all great at the same time. It was the same as it was in Three Arena 6 months ago. Then 2 weeks ago, I went to see, who was I seeing? Electric Picnic. Yeah, a bunch of bands. Kasabian, who I thought were dreadful, but I thought they were the last rock band, the kind of the fade out after Oasis. And I certainly want something better than that. And Oasis are better than that, so I'm glad to see them back. And then you have Coldplay the other night, who was just, like, outrageously good, if that's what you're into. And it was, the whole place was just lit up.
See, I didn't think you'd be into Coldplay.
Well, to be honest, it's like, they're not in my top 10 bands or anything like that, but your man has something. Like, they have 10 anthem-friendly, fantastic songs, and then they have another 10 to go with that as well. And I went with a bunch of people who really wanted to go, and we all went, and it was great fun, and we had a great night. And again, you go up to the front, it's quite easy to go up the front. There was no major hassle or anything like that. But actually, I made a mistake. I was actually too near it, because you need to be back further to see the small stage he uses as well. So I kind of blew that one. You're actually better in the stands at Coldplay, I think.
Do they put on a show per se? Like, are there lights and pyrotechnics?
An astonishing show. Just astonishing. I mean, first of all, Chris Martin is the most, he's just the most charismatic kind of guy out front, first of all. I mean, like, he dances in a weird kind of way, and it really works. He's kind of gauche. He's a little bit whatever. Like, the girls are in love with the guy, and then they also want to mother him. It's very unusual for a lead singer of a rock band like that. But he's just got something really good. He's very sincere. There's a lot of ad-lib stuff in it. And when he does the ad-lib stuff, it's very funny, and he's actually very good. It's a really big, entertaining show, and the people, and of course, the wrist lights thing make a huge difference. You'd have to be there to know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, what was the wrist light thing? Because I've heard reference to it, but I don't know what it was.
Okay, you get this. Basically, you know the way in a rock gig, you have guys doing follow spots and lights and all the rest of it, and, you know, shining it around the ground or shining it on the... Basically, there's 80,000 people doing the lights. You're doing the lights. You stick up your hand with this thing that you get when you walk in, which is a wristband thing. I don't know how it all works or whatever. And it's amazing the effect that it has. I mean, even in the quieter songs, the middle bits of each stand is just a red love heart, let alone all the flashing lights of all the different colours and all the different things. Like, obviously, during Yellow, guess what colour the whole of Crow Park was, you know? But, like, he really has it. Chris Martin just has it, and they have it down to a fine art. I'm not just talking about the fireworks at the end, the huge fireworks. I have no interest in fireworks at all. But it's just, he just does it well. He knows how to use the middle stage as well. And when you're doing the middle stage, it kind of makes the venue so much more intimate. Now, you could say, stop. Crow Park, intimate. Seriously, it really is, and it really was. And so long as it doesn't rain, you're laughing.
This Chris Martin and how good he is raises a question. I have seen a number of people on social media suggesting that Liam Gallagher is one of the great frontmen of all time. I've also seen a lot of the kind of thing of Ringo wasn't even the best drummer in the Beatles about Liam Gallagher and his frontman status. Where do you rate Liam Gallagher as a frontman?
Well, he's not one of the great front men of all time, but it's the attitude thing. I'll tell you, look, I'll give you a perfect example. I've seen Oasis 10 times, okay? But I've seen a tribute band called No Oasis. And No Oasis, it's very easy to play Oasis songs, three chords and you have every sound. So, there he is, slightly sideways, this guy, whoever he wasn't Liam Gallagher, obviously. And he's slightly sideways with his parka jacket on, his hands behind his back and all the rest, etc. Going, oh, you gotta roll with it and doing all the stuff you. And then when what's his name? Noel plays his guitar solo, or whoever Noel was in the band, he goes over to him with an attitude that kind of slinks over and he headbutts him. And the place erupted. It was fantastic. It was just, yes, I love it. And I'd give you an example, in the Blur Oasis thing. Damon Albarn is one of the greatest musicians to come out of England in the last 30 years.
What? Run that past me again.
Damon Albarn.
He's one of the greatest musicians to come out of the UK in the last 30 years.
Oh my God! Have you not seen the stuff he's done? Have you ever listened to, for instance, not just the two albums of The Good, the Bad, and the Queen? His own solo album, Everyday Robot. The Mali music he's made with Mali musicians. He's even done stuff with Red Hot Chili Peppers, Michael Nyman. He's done Dr. D, which is an opera. He's done Trainspotting. He's done The Strokes in 03. It was on the second album, but wasn't used in the end. On stage with David Bowie doing Fashion, Massive Attack, De La Soul. Oh, I haven't mentioned Blur yet. I mean, Blur's albums are fantastic. They're just brilliant, you know? And there was a thing 20 years ago. I'm sorry. Yeah, when is it? 30 years ago.
30 years.
The mid-90s, whatever it was.
I know.
And all that stuff about Blur versus Oasis. I mean, there was a time when the Parklife album came out. And it was kind of the north of England, the no-nonsense working class.
Now, posh art school boys.
The posh art school boys, the hipster, university-educated Blur. Perfect. And it was even on the BBC News and all this kind of thing. It was just a good out of laugh. The problem was that both the singles released by the band at the time weren't particularly great, particularly Oasis one. And, of course, it was Blur that won, if you like, which means absolutely nothing.
Was that Country House? Was that what they had at the time?
Yeah. It was a song about their manager called Dave Bowes, who had given up the music business and gone off to live in the country. So they made that song, yeah.
Texas, and
then there was Blur's one was Roll With It, which even Blur, Oasis, and even Oasis would say that wasn't one of the best. But the point is that, somebody called it Flat Pack Oasis, and that's kind of what it was. It was Tim Burgess and Charlotte called it that, which is perfect. That Blur won the battle, Oasis won the war, and Blur won the whole campaign in the end. But they're brilliant.
Texas, Oasis are one of the few bands in history to have defined a generation. They also have cross-generational appeal. Half the crowd at Liam Gallagher in the Three Arena during the summer was under 20. That is unheard of for a nostalgia-type act, so their appeal is totally different to other 90s bands. This is the thing that I've been fascinated by.
That is true.
The amount of young people who want to go and see it as if it is a relic of old decency from the early 90s that their parents were into, and that there is a sort of a... Oh, it's a once-in-a-lifetime chance to see history come back to life. Slightly depressing if you were there the first time.
The thing is, people are looking for a bit of something in music that isn't there at the moment. And all the things I mentioned earlier on about, everything from the perfect sound of a drum with a drum machine, or the auto-tuned vocals of everything that's on, or the Simon Cowellization of music. I mean, it deserves to have Stemtex just thrown at it, and let's get back to something real. And something real, I'm not saying Oasis are great necessarily, but they are real. Be Here Now, the third album, Standing on the Shoulders of Giants, the fourth, and Heathen Chemistry and Don't Believe, they're all pretty, and Dig Out Your Soul, they're all pretty dreadful. But the first two albums, that's enough. There's enough. And by the way, one is 30 years old this year and one is 30 years old next year, which is kind of perfect as well. But I mean, hold on, you mentioned Damon Albarn there. I mean, they did do around that time of the Oasis thing, a kind of a version of the England of, pubs and betting shops and the shipping forecast, they did all that kind of stuff, Phil Daniels and all that. So they were trying to be more streety, which they kind of shouldn't have done, really. It was just hilarious. But the whole thing was great.
Now, I want to check two things with you. One is whether or not you agree with this text that says, Anton, if you want to go to a show, Pink is the artist to see. I believe they
fly. Yeah, she flies through the air. She flies out of the venue and back in again.
That's impressive. Like, if they do that to Liam Gallagher, I'd go, I'd get in the queue at Ticketmaster. The other question then is, you have met these guys an awful lot over the time. To what extent is their battle, their internecine family conflict, to what extent is that fictional for publicity? And to what extent is it going to happen between now and August and render all of this a moot point because the boys won't get on stage together?
Actually, that's a very good question. And you'd often wonder, I must say I'm amazed that they waited 16 years. By the way, they haven't been inactive because he's had BDI, his band, and he's done stuff with John Squire.
Yeah, but that was
and
bad.
He's also had, High Flying Birds as Noel's band. And in fact, if you listen to the last album, the fourth one by them, in other words, they've been quite busy over the last 14 years or so. It's actually some really good stuff on the Council's Guys album. Shows he can write a tune when he has to, and he does. Now, he might have done it with the last few Oasis albums, but he can do it.
But to the point, Dave, will they fight?
Like, if they do, people will love it. I just, like, a bit of mouthy attitude is something that music could do with these days, because the way things are going, it's just, you know, music is just another facet of a consumer lifestyle, and we need a bit of oomph, you know. And I'm like, I mean, if something like Oasis, who's not my favourite band necessarily, is going to do it, I'm all for it, you know.
On that note, Dave, always a pleasure and a joy. The one and only Dave Fanny.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.